Good evening, Mayor and Council. This is the April 10th council briefing. We have three items scheduled on the agenda for you this evening. We do have a hard stop tonight at 6:45 because we'll be setting up for a 7 o'clock meeting for planning right after that at 7. First item that we have on for the council briefing is the budget assumptions for fiscal year 2024 budget prep. One of the things we've started over the past few years is to come with you early in the budget cycle. We're just wrapping up CIP and just starting the operational budgets and reviewing with you what our assumptions are for the preparation of the budget. That way, if there's any substantive changes that council would like us to make, we're doing it now rather than trying to readjust in July and August. So with that, I will turn the floor over to our CFO, Ashley Gossett.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. So before you in the agenda tonight, you received the budget assumptions for fiscal year 2024. And to give you a little kind of backup, we started the budget process in January by updating our cash flows. And then the month of February and March, we worked with the department on their five-year capital improvement planning. And so now we're really doing the budget process in earnest with our operational budgets. So the departments are working on their budgets right now, and we just want to confirm some things with council based on, or the assumptions that we're making. I mean, first and foremost, our estimates are intended to be kind of reliable and achievable. And when we are preparing the budget, we do it with ongoing revenues. We don't use single side or single one-time revenues to do ongoing operations. We reserve kind of grant dollars for one-time purchases or one-time activities. So we are preparing the budget right now with an assumed millage rate of 3.9947, which is the same that it's been for the last couple of years. And we're also basing it on the assumption that we will continue the 50% reduction in the South End TIF district. And the other revenues that we're working on right now, we're doing kind of preliminary estimates because our state revenues, we don't get numbers from them until late June or July. So right now we're doing conservative estimates based on what we've historically received for those revenues. And then for our enterprise revenues, everything is being budgeted in accordance with our rate resolutions. We do have a CPI adjustment for the water and sewer fund, and then we also have a sanitation rate step up in October 1st. For the expenses, the personnel costs are being budgeted in accordance with all of our contracts. And then our operating costs are being budgeted with the assumption that we maintain the current service level. With that, we have our power costs are currently being budgeted at $72.5 million, which is an increase from fiscal 23 based on what we've been seeing from our provider and what forecast that they've given to us. As in kind of in 2022, we had $78 million in expenses for power costs. So we are seeing it start to go downward, but it's still higher than what our 23 estimates were. And then our capital outlay in our five-year improvement program, it's kind of the same as last year. We increased the capitalization threshold to $5,000, and we're going to continue that into this year. So kind of with that, are there any questions about the assumptions?
Councilor Jansen?
Just a quick question. That may be for our city manager or you. And when it comes to the five-year capital improvement program, that $25,000 basis, does that change through council, or how is that determined, and does it go up or down?
So it's kind of an administrative policy. We want to make sure that we're kind of capturing everything when we do our five-year look forward. And so like a small item, like a tool, or it might cost $5,000, but we wouldn't put in the capital improvement plan because it's kind of immaterial to the overall budget. So we picked $25,000 so we could catch kind of the large dollar programs or expenditures that we would be seeing within the five-year horizon.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Ashley? If not, Ashley, thank you for reviewing the assumptions.
All right, thank you. I have one more item, that's okay. The second item in the agenda is the budget workshop schedule for this year. It is a little bit different than last year. We're keeping the same dates where we meet the last Friday in July to go with our kind of showcase, and then the Monday and Tuesday of the subsequent 2 weeks to do our budget workshops. But this year, we thought we'd shuffle the departments around a little bit and open up that last date, Tuesday, August 8th. We'll just hold it as an additional date if needed. And then I do have to remind everyone that the budget adoption hearings, those are our tentative dates. We have to move for the county or the school board. If they pick those dates, we have to move to a different one. So right now, this is tentative based on their choices. So is everyone in consensus on the budget calendar?
Everyone good with the dates and times?
Excellent.
Okay, thank you.
Ashley, you're good to go. The second item on the agenda is for the, or the third item, is for the city attorney to discuss with you all repealing Code of Ordinances Chapter 2, and I will turn that over to Ms. Robinson.
Thank you, Mr. City Manager and members of council. About a year ago, we discussed or started discussing whether we needed to keep Chapter 2 of the city code because many of the provisions were procedural in nature and they were to be covered by the LPM. And now that we have actually formally adopted the LPM, many of the provisions of Chapter 2 are not necessary at all. But before we put back in front of you the ordinance to repeal that section, I just wanted to bring the subject matter back before you to determine whether or not that was still something that you were interested in doing. I'm happy to answer any questions, but I would request that you do go forward with the repeal of Chapter 2.
Councilor Golden.
Thank you. Sandy, I have a couple of questions. So Section 2-27, Declaration of Votes, Roll Call. I looked at the LPM and I don't see that we spell out the fact that the city clerk is going to arrange the names in alphabetical order and rotate and all of that in the LPM. Is that something that should be in the LPM so that we make sure that that's captured?
Okay, so if you want that particular provision, the answer to the question is yes. So one of the things that I want you to keep in mind, there was no intent to verbatim take everything that was in Chapter 2 and put it into the LPM. We do address the roll call vote within the LPM at Section D1, but we did not have that level of specificity there. So yes, if you want to have that manner or process included, we would have to amend the LPM to put it there. The clerk could, until that time, just employ that as a practice. The charter doesn't require this. This was all what you have in the city code.
Okay. I'd be willing to listen to what my fellow council members have to say. If we, you know, I'm okay with us continuing it, you know, as practice, that this is how we would do it, not necessarily have to amend the LPM, but I don't know, I tend to be a little more, I lean more towards the, well, let's, you know, let's put everything in there kind of side of the fence, but I'm fine with.
Yeah, I don't want to give the impression that I'm not interested in that coming over. I simply didn't think that it should be in the city code, number one. But number two, at some point in the future, whether it's sooner or later, we can amend the LPM to put all of those additional details in it if you'd like.
Okay. Yeah, and then the other one was just Section 2-37. I know it's the same thing. The LPM doesn't have this specificity in it, so this is saying that the city manager shall submit regular monthly financial reports, but the LPM just mentions that he will provide the city council with reports, I think, something to that effect. So
right, again, it's kind of along the same lines. And then even with respect to the LPM, there's a great deal of there was some inclusion of some things that might have just been better handled as personnel matters away from the LPM, but they were brought into or incorporated in the LPM sort of out of respect of the first version. But this might be one of those things, because maybe another council might want more frequent reporting or less frequent reporting, and then you have to go through this formal process of now modifying what the expectations are. And it's really at that point a personnel matter, unless, of course, you're going to publish all of this out for the city on some regular periodic basis.
And if I can chime in, I believe that the requirement to provide monthly financial reports to council is actually within our charter. So this is just a restatement of what's already in the charter document?
So, the financial reporting is in the LPM, is the regularity that has been specified.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Robinson? If not, are you all comfortable with her proceeding with an item to bring in front of you for consideration for repealing Chapter 2? Seeing that's not, I think you got a consensus.
Right. Thank you.
This next item is going to take a little bit of time, but I want to give a preface behind it as well. 2 to 3 years ago, our country and some of the major metropolitan areas was dealing with a lot of civil unrest. And there were a lot of questions with regards to police agencies, with regard to what they do, how they do their job, what type of training they've received, etc. The chief and I, going back about 2.5 years ago, had some in-depth conversations, and we thought at that time that it would be good that we did a presentation to council on what our CALEA accreditation actually is, what it encompasses, and the types of techniques and training that our officers have to go through. With that being said, the chief and I had a conversation that this is probably something that is good to do on a biannual basis every 2 years, so that as personnel on council change, that new council always has the opportunity to have a full CALEA presentation and to ask questions of the command staff so that they feel comfortable in the types of methodologies that our officers are using in the field. So with that, this is the second time that our police department will be giving a presentation on CALEA accreditation, and it will also be followed up with a few demonstrations for you as well. But I'm going to start by turning it over to Chief Smith to do a very brief introduction.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. This is a continuation of the original CALEA presentation that y'all saw on Zoom a couple of years ago. It was pretty popular, and y'all also suggested that we include it in CPA, which has been done, and we've given it a couple times, and it is a very popular topic, and I think it shows it's become a culture for us now. It's been 28 years that I've been here, and we've been accredited the whole time, so we don't know anything else. That's what's important with this. I have about 18,000 agencies. I'm not going to steal Tom's thunder. Only about 650 are national accredited with best practices. And not only do we, we're measured for what we say we're going to do, but we're judged for what we're doing, what we're supposed to. The second piece of this is going to be the drone presentation. I promise when we present this council, we do a demo. Originally, we're going to fly it here, then take a shot at the door, and go up the beach and third and give you an aerial view. Of course, we can't, because Nor'easter will ground it due to weather. So we're going to do some hallway stuff, and we're going to do the aerial in here. Detective Ford is going to do it, and the final thing is probably what everybody's here for. We're going to do a taser explanation and demo, and two anonymous city councilmen are going to get it shot with the taser. So I hope they're prepared, because they're committed now. So with that said, Commander Bingham's going first, and like I said, I appreciate all y'all's support, and this is a chance for us to show some of the stuff we can do and what we've done. So, Tom, you ready?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. How's everybody doing tonight? In front of you on the dais, I put two packets. One is a black folder, which contains some CALEA information we're going to go over in a minute. The other standalone packet is what we're going to get into as far as a response to resistance or a use of force packet. At the end, I will have to collect that response to resistance packet back, since it hasn't been redacted yet. So, CALEA. CALEA is a business that is our Commission on Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agencies. It is a flagship accreditation process. As Chief Smith said, that we began back in 1992 for our initial accreditation in 1995. To discuss what it is, it's very important to tell you where it came from. And very briefly, it came from 1979, a bunch of executives from the International Association of Chiefs of Police, the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, the National Sheriff's Association, and the Police Executive Research Forum got together and decided that for law enforcement to truly progress into a professional organization, they needed some type of credentialing authority. Somebody to bring all these practices nationwide and try to bring them into most common operating procedures. So currently, roughly 18,000 law enforcement agencies in the United States, only 4% or 728 law enforcement agencies are CALEA accredited. CALEA has expanded into academy accreditation, communication center accreditation, but for this focus, 728 agencies. There's a lot of independent state agencies or state accreditation boards. Florida has their own, but it's not as all-encompassing as CALEA is. So why is this important? One, standardization. CALEA doesn't come in and tell us how we have to do things. It kind of gives us that roadmap, taking in national best practices. Basically, it's kind of telling us how to get from point A to point B and to make sure that we don't forget anything along the way. If you look in the beginning, in the front of that black binder, that is a list of all the standards that we have to perform and document in order to have a successful accreditation. And even though there's 370 of those points that we have to cover, each point could have anywhere from 2 to 12 subsets that documentation is also required. So it's very difficult, very the national best practices. So it keeps us informed of the current trends and the best practices being utilized in agencies across the nation. Many agencies, police departments, sheriff's offices, don't all operate on the same computer system. They don't operate on the same reporting system. They don't operate in the same standard way across the board. So this is a way that you can bring everybody together while agencies can still act in their own independent fashion, but to make sure that everybody's following these very key concepts. So CALEA is a very community-oriented policing model agency, which fit in very well here, since Jacksonville Beach Police Department has been practicing that for decades upon decades. So this further strengthens the partnership and increases the transparency between our agency, our city, and the community. It keeps us accountable to the process, and the process is very critical. And it allows us to institute and follow operational guidelines and processes. It also, probably most importantly, it protects the agency and the officers. So it reduces the risk and liability exposure, reduces liability insurance costs, and it offers a much stronger defense in civil cases. A lot of civil cases that might be brought and other agencies that are non-accredited. Once they find out that the agency is CALEA accredited, it changes the ballgame, because they know that we have all our paperwork in order and we follow a specific set of guidelines. So why is this all, protects it from the good idea fairy. So we don't want to be the agency, an administration, supervisors, or an officer trying to go back and think each independent action or incident, try to think, well, what did we do last time? What paperwork did we have to do last time? What was the process last time? Well, it's all spelled out black and white. And the back of the black notebook, I made a copy of our summary that we submitted to CALEA for our most recent reaccreditation last year. It gives a lot of background information as far as the city, the agency, and then what I really wanted to highlight was toward the end, I took out two pieces of the statistical information that were submitted, and each one covers traffic warnings and citations that are issued, and then response to resistance or uses of force. And each one is broken down per year of the four-year cycle. So this gives us a very quick look back to see the citations, or the citations going to where the citations going, how the citations being issued. We're looking at any deviations that might warrant further investigation. And we're also looking at our response to resistance or use of force. Are we maintaining? Or are we excelling in some point? Do we need additional training, et cetera? So it really gives us that firm breakdown that we need. So as we talk about at the end of that, statistical information for the response to resistance report, or response to resistance or use of force. Response to resistance is broken down. It's either hands-on, spray, taser, a shooting, use of a canine, etc. So whenever a use of force is made, whether the person is injured or not, we're still going to fill out the exact same paperwork in the exact same way, and that keeps us committed through the process to make sure that we don't miss anything. So if I can turn your attention to the second packet that's up there, it should be response to resistance form. This is a sample packet from 2020, a tasing that occurred. What I'd like to do is just take a few minutes. I believe it's on the third page. There's a narrative. If you can just read that narrative real quick, and then I'm going to walk you through this particular incident. Uses force, no matter what degree, we have to capture that moment in time for our documentation and for any potential civil issues that might come out later. So we have to capture as much information at that point as possible. So once the officer uses force and takes a person to jail, that's not the end of it. We need to fully document. We complete a response to resistance report, which ends up going through multiple layers of supervisor approval. And in that report, everything needs to be captured and attached to that report electronically. So also in the packet, you're going to see there's an arrest and booking report. There's a standardized form to get people into the Duval County Jail. And then the incident or the offense report that every officer fills out here within the city, that's also included. And that information is mostly the same. The offense report is a chance for the person, for the officer, to expound into more detail. Then probably most importantly is, aside from that, is witness statements. We've included a few witness statements that were in that packet. We like to get third-party witness statements, try to get that information written in their own hand, documented, so if we have to go back to later. We also, in this case, it was a tasing. I'm getting ready to show you a video of that. It was a tasing, so not only with the reports, the witness statements, photographs, we also have to download a report from Taser that documents the date, the time, and the information, how long the Taser was activated for that particular deployment. So if it was one deployment and the person wanted to come back 2 months later or a year later, say he or she shot me 16 times with the Taser, we just know that's not true. And then photographs. I apologize for the quality of the photographs that are in the back. But we document from head to toe, front, back, left, and right, any person involved in youth sports, whether or not there are any outward signs of injury whatsoever. We need to document that in detail. And as well, I like to tell everybody, we get everything, we capture everything, and then once we think we capture everything, we go plus one. There's always one more thing that we can capture, something that information that we can collect. So like I said, a year from now, 2 years from now, then we have everything together. So this was the incident. I'm going to show you a video. The camera was on the boardwalk. It was a little dirty, but you'll be able to make it out. This was an incident, as you read in the narrative. Gentleman went down on the beach and started an incident with some people that were on the beach. An officer arrived, and as that officer was talking to him, he took off and ran across the dunes towards the lifeguard station. So the patrol vehicle that's on the boardwalk right now was Officer McVicker. He was working in downtown Cape capacity this day. And just a few seconds, you're going to see the gentleman in the top right-hand corner of the screen coming across the dune, and he's going to walk down towards the bottom of the screen. Yeah, a lot of cactus. So it comes up. Now we're just going to walk nonchalantly, so it doesn't attract any more attention. And then the other officers started coming on scene, trying to set a perimeter, trying to find out where this guy is. So we didn't know at the time that he had gone, snuck into the lifeguard tower that was on the stairs over close to the second floor of the tower. And as the officers are coming around, they're trying to get a game plan together, trying to figure out where in the world could this guy have gone. You see the two officers up top, one's going back to the beach, one's going to the walkover, and two are staying there to try to coordinate other officers coming in. And then a lifeguard screams out from the tower, he's over here, he's over here, and zoop, gets right by him. They gave him a verbal warning, and bam. So taser is very effective. I'm very glad that these officers, when they were doing their investigation, they looked around and looked up, go, perfect, camera. Let's capture that video, capture that information. Let me go. Oh, hang on, Shaq. I'm sorry. There we go. I'm going to go fast forward. And that's how he received most of his injuries, as you see. And he landed on the left side of his body. But a simple application of the taser prevented any officers getting hurt running after this guy, him getting further hurt, getting into a fight with the officers. And I also got to commend the cheetah-like stealth qualities of those two officers. They jumped into action. He just pulled it out there and then shot. And then thankfully, if I play the video out about another minute, lifeguards show up with their first aid packs and instantly start giving this guy first aid. But he was not a nice person. He was extremely combative, very derogatory, and he refused to get into the car. Multiple times they tried to get him into the car, and you'll see after the taser, it's not like Hollywood or the movies. You get shot by a taser and you pass out and go unconscious. As soon as the electricity is over, you can get up and move. He's still being resistant and kept being resistant all the way through to the booking process. He showed enormous restraint dealing with this guy that evening. That's all I have. Any questions on CALEA accreditation or response to resistance?
Councilor Jansen?
So can you explain for the benefit of my colleagues on council how you know which officer deployed his taser and what's not, what's going on, what goes out with the probes, the CHADS?
Yeah, I don't want to take anything away from Sergeant Wallace's
okay,
presentation, but They're little pink and, are they still pink and yellow? Yeah. So pink and yellow, little small circles, about that big, they're called aphids, anti-felon identification. And there's, I don't know, 50 dozens of these that go out in a blast that you'll never see like glitter, but you'll never find them. So if there's any, I didn't fire or he fired or whatever, they can go back and they can find that little, almost like a micro dot, and on that has the serial number for the taser cartridge that was used. And you can backtrack that.
One other question I have without opening Pandora's box tonight. Does Kalia, have they started, because it's been 3 years now for me, have they started entering into the world of body-worn cameras and their opinions of it, whether we should be looking at it or not, or do they just, you don't have it, so we move on?
Yeah, I don't have that information. I know there's some advisories or some information that's coming out as far as body-worn cameras and different aspects of use of force that we still haven't fully digested, but I don't think they're saying that it must be mandatory.
Any other council members have questions? Mayor Hoffman.
I just don't have a light switch. Hey. Never noticed that. Thank you for this briefing and for continuing to do that. There was a long time where this would kind of come to us as a budgetary item, so it's good to have the background and to understand that it's not really a cost, it's an investment. But can you give us the approximate cost that we spend annually in terms of maintaining our CLIA accreditation?
It's roughly about $3,000 a year, maybe just a little bit north of $3,000 a year that we pay in a four-year cycle. And then the cost of the salary and benefits for our accreditation manager.
And I will say I was able to speak with one of the members of the panel last year, I think city manager did as well, and that was a really great opportunity to hear what was topical. I think it was mobile field force at that time and kind of what they were interested in learning more about in terms of our agency. But I will say I just read the summary of my conversation, and one of the things I did tell them and that they liked a lot was that at the time everyone on our council had done Citizen Police Academy or regular police academy, and I think that went a long way in terms of them knowing that we all took the time to do that. So I would continue to encourage that for council members currently and going forward. Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you. Councilor Mazza.
No, just thank you, and I appreciate everything you guys do, especially with the the CLIA accreditation. I know you said earlier when there's like civil lawsuits on the police department, usually the attorneys look at a department differently if they have that accreditation. Is that what you were saying?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Councilor Horn.
You said, I want to say it's 4%. You said 482 out of 17,000 law enforcement agencies.
750 some odd out of.
Oh, 750. Yeah, but I got the number wrong. Yeah. So I guess my question is, are there others in this area who are CLIA accredited? And looking at this, and just operationally, I would think that a smaller agency would be easier to do with a smaller agency than with a larger agency like JSO, something like that. I'm just my thoughts.
I know JSO is, they're dual accredited, they're CLIA accredited and state accredited. It's actually harder on a smaller agency because of the expense as far as accreditation manager, because you need somebody solely dedicated in order to put all this together and go through the on-site and go through the reviews. So it's a little bit more, actually more difficult for smaller agencies.
Okay, interesting. Thank you. And thank you all.
Okay, thank you. We're going to turn it over now to Alan Ford for the drone presentation.
Ooh.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Basically, thank you for allowing us to come in today and to demo some of these life-saving tools. And also thank you for believing in the mission and our new objectives. I'm Alan Ford. I'm a detective with the Jackson Beach Police Department, and I played a huge role in the development of the drone program. So when developing the drone program, we took an account and we studied federal law, state law, FAA guidelines, procedures, and we created policies around that information. After we designed that platform, we then hand-selected 4 pilots, including myself. One of them, Julie Spurrier, she's not here at the moment, and we have Deanna Thomas, and we have Shane Jarman. All 4 of the pilots received their FAA drone pilot's license, and as of right now are able to fly missions for the department. Through recent news, I know we've all heard that our drones, do they meet the criteria to fly for agencies, right? And so I'll tell you, if you haven't heard about this on the news, it's the governor's objective to remove all Chinese manufactured drones from public safety. And doing that, a list was created, and I'll inform you right now that we are in compliance. The drones in which we're operating or which City Council approved are SkyDio drones, and they are 1 out of the 5 approved manufacturers. And so right now, out of the drones in which we've chose, the drones have played a huge role already in basically the mission, right? We received these drones in mid-February, and since mid-February, we completed 7 missions with them already. Missing persons to suicidal jumpers, to forensic imaging, to evidence locating, to searching structures for dangerous subjects, and also it was overwatch for a SWAT search warrant. So it's already being put to use, and I can tell you that it's probably just going to continue to grow and grow. Up on the PowerPoint, these are just some of the uses in which we have identified, but we are truly just scratching the surface. I'm telling you right now, this unit is going to touch every aspect within the agency sooner than later. So as you see on the board, our first one's missing persons. We hear about this all the time, especially in our city, right? So we got elderly, we got at risk, we got missing children on the beach, or just anybody missing within the city to take the place of air unit. Next, we're looking at forensics investigations. We use this all the time with our crime scene, our traffic crashes, and even for large scenes for mapping. Traffic crash investigations, it's going to kind of run into the same, so it's going to be the same as our forensics investigations. So another thing we're not, it's part of, part of our daily is crowd management. I'm providing real-time intel on friendly crowds, hostile crowds, and disturbances, festivals, large groups, and also provides a count for how many people we have at certain events. So definitely we can utilize it a lot when the plaza's being rented out, right, for safety concerns. Also, when it comes to SWAT and hostage situations, we use it for call-outs, barricaded gunmen, hostages, scouting interior and exterior of the buildings, and also for pre-mission reconnaissance and real-time eyes-on. For interior operations, this is really important, and you can kind of start seeing this throughout the industry, right? Versus sending real live men in or canines in structures, now we can start utilizing this drone with inside buildings, right? So it's either gonna work in conjunction with canine, and if it's unsafe for officers or canine, the drone will just go in. And we got crime scene mapping, tight spaces such as attics, or spaces we can't even get to such as roofs. Traffic pattern reviews. We got traffic congestion, traffic patterns, and this determines and allows for adjustments for festivals or events. beforehand or during, we can send a drone out and we can start shifting what we need to move. And also with the traffic patterns, this also helps out with hurricane evacuation, critical incidences, disaster response and documentation, and also tracking erosion on our beachfront. And just based on these uses, does anyone have any questions?
On the crowd management, how many have we used them in the past couple of festivals already, just to see how the crowds are doing?
We haven't.
Is there a plan to do so, just as a proactive measure?
Oh yes, yes. Our plan is really on the next festival. We want to go live with it in
Memorial Day weekend.
Yep.
I do have a question. You mentioned getting a count of the crowd. How is that something that, is there technology on the drone that
Really getting a count, but more so getting a better observation of how many people are out there, right? Because we can see so much from ground level, but just sending it up, and maybe we can count certain areas, like if we know a group is in this corner, yeah, we can start kind of picking that off. But yeah, we don't have the tech within the device that would do that.
Okay.
As of now. Who knows, updates in the future.
HQ, I'm 1097 at the stage and location. The drone is 1051.
So this video was just kind of showing hotspots within our city and how we can get to certain areas, right? So if we had an event or we had a festival, what we can watch out for. Beach proper, we're searching for missing children. Just kind of shows you, like, and we'll see in the later slides these drones have. They can fly 7 miles. God forbid, but there is an effort to place it. It all kind of shows that. Capabilities of how close you can get the vehicle. If there is a suspicious vehicle, it's not in And so with that, like I said, we chose Skydio, which is on the approved list. The two drones we chose are the X2 and the 2 Plus, which is this blue one. It's a little baby drone. So they're pretty similar in the fact that the X2, Shane named it Baylor. For FAA, we have to name the drone. So the X2 is Baylor. And so within winds, it can fly in 23-mile-per-hour winds. The battery life on it is going to be 35 minutes per battery. The speed of the drone is going to be 25 miles per hour. The range is 3.7 miles. Capabilities, 3D mapping, obstacle avoidance, reduced crashes, 4K cameras for still shots and video, night operations, which comes equipped with strobe lights, and the kicker for this one, it has thermal, right? So if we were to hunt for missing subjects, we can pick up that heat signature based on humans and animals.
Have you tested the flare on Bales?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we recently tested it with a jumper that we had, and we tested his seat. They still had heat signature coming off the body, so that was, yeah. It also has up to 10 object tracking. So if we had a suspicious person at one of the festivals and we wanted to track certain people, we can set parameters, and this drone will keep an eye on those subjects. Next one is going to be the 2+, the Microraptor. I named that one. So it can fly in 24 mile per hour winds, a 27-minute battery life. Its max speed is 36 miles per hour. The range is the same, 3.7 miles. 3D mapping, obstacle avoidance, 4K video, steel shots, night operations with strobe lights. And the main one with this one, it's a little faster. It has a decreased battery percentage versus the X2, and it doesn't have the FLIR. And it's smaller, so it can get in tighter spaces. So, yeah, these drones have already played a vital role within the agency's operations, and I can't wait to see where this program goes. So this information can be found, if you are curious about it, the Florida Department of Management Services. Basically, this approved list was implemented on April 5th, 2023. Florida State Statute is going to be 934.50.7. And I just want to take any questions. If anyone doesn't, we're going to demo.
Just a couple. Obviously, it's police property. If someone wants to throw something at it, it will be treated as such, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. And then second thing, on the, you guys train all the time. The more you train, the better you're at it. And I'm a firm believer of that, especially as a military vet. We used to train for fires on the flight deck. And sometimes it was boring, but it was necessary. Do you guys train on this?
Oh, yes. We're already logging training hours as it is right now. Like, we created a program where we're documenting everything. We're also working with multiple agencies right now. So St. John's County, and kind of before everything cranked up, it was JSO. Right? They will come out and also teach us and give us guidance in what we need to do. And they've also helped us in reference to gaining greater access to the airways, right? So getting certain restrictions lifted for us, line of sight, stuff, areas such as that. Yeah.
Oh. I'm very supportive of this, so happy to see it.
Well, I'm sending up the demo, a couple of things. Y'all remember we got a phone call out of the doctor. If he runs out the doctor, he's got a lot of advice and symptoms. I'm going to get a bunch of therapies and I'm going to get a bunch of therapies. We're going to get the aerial force. And then we work out a flight right out the door with the city. And the big one, we're going to take it above the utility to the lab and go to the utility. But these guys are probably going to be able to fly them. We're just going to fly them all the way up to the back of the mission. So we can fly to the system. I just want to put them in the fly now. And we're going to get to the other suit real fast. So Shaq is the supervisor of our aviation division. There are three sections. We have a drone, a fixed wing, and a rotor. I'm just joking. You know, but you don't need to put those.
Well, Chief, in full disclosure, that golf ball that hit the drone, that was Greg Sutton's.
Big question. If someone does tell them they're going to shoot you at the last 5 minutes, that's part of that.
Chief, with the acquisition of the drones into the department, did you need to upgrade your CALIA standards to make sure that you had coverage for the drone and its operation?
Just so y'all know, we've got a new club.
Chief, so you're saying if you send this up and you see something, you can't, how does that work? I mean, I'm just saying if you see a crime in progress, you would assume this is an extension of the hall enforcement officer's eyes.
Start
Officer Gordon County Service.
And with this, imagine if it was Officer Gordon County Service. We needed to buy it.
Council, good evening. I'm Brian Wallace. I'm a sergeant at Midnights. I'm also one of the co-leads of the Taser Department. I don't have a nice name for the Taser other than Taser, but we're going to go with Mr. Horn and Mr. Meza for these two cartridges right here, just so you guys know. Yeah, I know that's what you guys are waiting for. So Sergeant Cooper and I took over the Taser program back in 2018, 2019, and the first thing that we identified is we had two devices, the X26 and the X26P. We'll talk about those in a little bit. The X26 is 2003 technology. We had devices as old as 2007, over 10, 12, and now almost 15 years old. Per Axon recommendation, and when I say Axon, I mean Axon and Taser International. They merged in 2017, so if I say Axon in front of Taser, think of them as the same thing. We had antiquated technology, so we looked at several options. Chief Smith was very involved. Should we buy more X26P or should we upgrade to the next level of technology that Axon, that Axon has? And so the first thing that we tested was the Taser 7, which I actually have on my vest right now. We had three devices that they gave to us free of charge. And during the testing and evaluation period, one person, Detective Ford, actually used the Taser. And I think the quote was, "Bro, it worked." And there were several other officers that were on scene and he was like, "Wow." A 25-year vet, Aaron Scarborough, said, I've never seen a Taser work as good as this one did, but don't let me tell you about it. Let's listen to Axon's video introducing the Taser 7.
Thank you. conduct an energy weapon on by accident, they do several things. I'm sure you've seen the body-worn cameras, you've seen the car cameras, you've seen virtual reality, and they also have Taser. They pretty much have the corner market on electrical weapons. There's no real other company that has conducted energy weapons for police, law enforcement, and military on the market. Basically, how it works is a compressed nitrogen capsule explodes, and two barbed wires, we call them probes, expel out. They go 25 feet, maximum distance. At 25 feet, two things happen. The wires either break, or the barbs come right back and hit whatever's next. Dark fly maximum, like I said, 25 feet, and the ratio is about 7 feet away of distance is 1 foot of probe spread, for just for some perspective. The two devices that we have are the X26P, 2013 technology. It's a single red dot. Where that red dot is where the top probe goes. And you'll notice the biggest difference between the X26P and the Taser 7, single dot versus a double dot. Okay, so you're guessing where the bottom probe is going to go for the X26P devices. For the new Taser 7, you have top and bottom probe. And I'll show you on the target here in a second what that means. Difference in price and per device, obviously it's a little bit more expensive. And the CQ versus SO cartridges, that's basically a close cartridge and a long-range cartridge. That's what those mean. Currently, we have 23 Taser 7 devices, 39 X26Ps, and the goal is to purchase 10 per year to essentially get away from the X26P old technology and introduce everybody to the Taser 7. What you'll notice here in this slide is 140 response to resistance reports from January 2020. Per year, we went 16, 18, 19 deployments, and so far we have 7 this year. So if you're doing your math right, we're on track for 28 deployments. Do I think we'll hit 28? No, but are we on track to hit more deployments than the previous 3 years? Absolutely. The best part about this chart is 2020, we had 43 total response to resistances, as Commander Bingham said earlier. In 2021, we had 43 response to resistances. And in 2022, Councilman Meza, 43 response to resistances. So we're consistent. But we're also consistently increasing our Taser deployment, which means officers are more confident with the Taser, they believe in it, and also it's just a much better, less lethal option as opposed to doing hammer strikes or knee strikes or things like that, or some other use of force option that we have to employ. It just, you know, you saw the video, it looks a lot better to use that than use some other physical force. So with that, that was pretty quick. I want to do a little demonstration on our target, and then after that we'll get to the show that everybody wants to see. Questions?
I was just going to say, I honestly think that in the ubiquitously videotaped environment that we live today, I think that the public's view of a Taser deployment as opposed to a physical suppression of a suspect is probably more well viewed. You know, having to physically, you know, take somebody to the ground and do whatever it is you need to do to get them under control, I think these are actually more well viewed, in my opinion.
Absolutely. What do I want to say here? Anybody else?
Okay. Well, he said
Police, drop the weapon. Taser, taser, taser.
What you're seeing here is three focus limits. There is active electrical current that's going between all three of these staging posts. Okay? Doesn't matter if it's top, bottom, bottom, top, bottom, bottom, top, top. It does not matter. There is going between these three bits and not this. But really, that's
the old school. Back when the older guys had, we only had one shot. So, you know, you're in trouble when you're at the Lynch's or Richmond, and you hit someone with it and they pull them out and they're able to get loose, and then you basically have an empty table just because it's too upgraded, incapacitated. Ready?
And an officer is out of the subject to see his dick?
Only where the two probes go. So, for example, there's only electrical current that's going between these probes. So, holding on to a limb or something. However, you touch anywhere between here, 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 you will
get the effects. That's Sergeant Bingham, when me and him were fighting with
the
guy.
That was your fault. I'll be more than happy to tell that story. No. Okay.
I saved Sergeant Bingham, man. I was a hero. I saved his life. Also, the good thing about Taser is for the 5 seconds it took the ride, you're totally locked up, and once the ride's over, you're fine. So, a little effect. Nothing wrong with you. You're good to go.
I have a really good story with the Taser 7. When we first got it, we had a call 27. Guy out of his mind, he's walking down 3rd Street, and he has nothing. So he's blocked off 3rd Street, and I go past, and I get out of my car, and I try to approach him, and he takes his stage left, and he starts running towards me. I had a quick decision to make, I want to shoot him, or go to the Taser 7, I want to the Taser 7, and block him off the block, before he's able to stab me. So, it definitely works, it's a great tool.
Drop the weapon.
While we're cleaning up, I know Mike wanted me to come up here and talk about the parking real quick. I know it's kind of a letdown. The parking at Eric at 34th Avenue South, that's a semi-parking. Basically, we've already submitted no parking signs and modify those parking areas to DOT.
These are the yearly numbers last year to today.
Okay, wait right there. You can give it to him. And the DOT said, no, we're going to keep it as is. So basically, the semi-parking and the alternate parking there, that's what DOT put it in for. So they're not going to change it. We have the report. It was given by DOT about how long ago?
About a year ago.
Eric will go through the stats real quick.
Yep.
So there was some questions last time about some parking issues around the citywide and the CRA. So there was a specific complaint under the Beach Boulevard Bridge. So we went back and we pulled, these are yearly numbers. So there's been 8 complaints under the bridge, 5 for suspicious persons, 3 for music, and we will continue to watch that. The semi-complaint that the chief spoke about on South 3rd, where the semis are allowed to park on the east side of the road, we've received 5 complaints on that. And our really only recourse on that is to mark them if they've been there longer than 60 hours. And now we can't mark tires anymore, so officers usually take a picture or something like that to see if that vehicle has moved. So 5 complaints. And a large part of that is where the neighborhoods have built out pretty close to 3rd Street. And then citywide, Jan 1, 2022 to March 31st, 2022, which was in the chief's email a couple of days ago, we did 198 citations citywide. And Jan 1, 2023 to present, we've done 491 citations. And to further isolate that, over St. Patrick's Day weekend, 107 parking tickets issued citywide, 88 of those were in the CRA. So we will continue to keep an eye on the parking in those specific areas and on those specific problems.
Since it's been a year since we've talked to FDOT, so I've been, now when I'm in South Jacksonville Beach, I'm noticing there's a lot of long, you know, not individual car parking right across from the church, across from some of the medical offices, and that really one section that we're getting the complaints from is really the only place where the long parking is right up against residential. So I think we have an argument. There's plenty of places for semi-trucks to park down there that are either in front of green space or in front of businesses. This is really the only one that's in front of residential. So can we revisit this with FDOT? Can we give the citizens an opportunity to appeal to them, even if we just mark the only vehicles they even see parked there are semis? So it's not like people are parking there to go to the beach or to go to the shopping plaza. So right. I don't really understand the reluctance, even if we just hatched it and made it so that it wasn't parking at all.
We can make another run at it and maybe limit it in front of the houses.
I mean, yep. I think that would be...
Because there are some other parking for a semi up near Madrid that we had some complaints on as mm-hmm. well. And that was probably the most recent area they've taken a look at by FDOT. And that's where they said there too. Got to leave it as is right there, just south of the gate store right there. So, mm-hmm. But the problem area is, to your point, has been down south there, down near Home Depot and that shopping center.
And it's not ideal. Those houses are really close to A1A.
Right to the sidewalk.
So there's a number of problems there, but I wouldn't want a running semi parked outside of my second floor.
Make another run of DOT and assess citizens doing it. It might be
That's fine. But I know the citizens are looking for an outlet now. If it's not us, they want to know where to go next. So I think we need, you know, at least make another good faith effort at it.
Make the effort, run the process again, and we'll let you know when the process
is. Absolutely.
Chief, I know she said, you said her, but if you'd like it to be me, I'm willing to do that. I know the people in traffic ops, and I'm very close with the Secretary of District 2. So I have the relationship, if you don't mind me taking that lead if necessary.
We'll start the process and we'll let you know when we call.
Thanks, sir. Yes, sir.
Anything else from council?
Good job.
Fantastic job.
Ms. Robinson, you're next.
Yeah.
No. Now I know why they fall to the ground.
So we've got 9 minutes left. And I know we got to get out of here so that Planning Commission can set up. I've got no other miscellaneous items for you. Are there any committee assignment reports any council members wanted to talk about?
I would, I'm anxious to get an update on VLSC. Rather not wait a month for that. So if we can...
We do have another mediation session tomorrow, all day, awesome. Starting at 9 a.m. in downtown.
Good.
As far as the contents of what we discussed, we're not allowed to discuss the mediation outside of mediation, unfortunately.
Yeah. About progressing, which is good.
Fernando, Councilor Mesa?
I just have a quick briefing topic. I know I was talking to Sandy Goldie and in Tallahassee, that old veterans lot, the little corner right behind Snickers, I know the art committee is taking over it, but I think a good 9/11 memorial will be something worth looking at in that little corner.
Doing something in that corner?
Yeah.
Would you like would council like a conversation with our CRA coordinator as to what the CRA is currently planning for that particular location? I think they're doing an RFP for artwork, but if you'd like, we can schedule having the Taylor Mods come in, talk to you about that site.
Sounds good.
Councilor Nichols?
I have two items for potential upcoming meetings. First of all, the Live Local Act came out, and I know we discussed it briefly internally, but I've had some other people, I've read it. It is somewhat, I can see that there's potentially some gray area that we may have to deal with about the height, that the way it's stated, I would just, is it okay if we get more of a detailed view of that whole Live Local Act? That
Live Local Act, yeah, we can do that as well.
And the other one is that talk on a future briefing to discuss a pilot project for ticketed special events at the Seawalk Pavilion. Is that something we could get on a future briefing also?
Is there consensus to have a discussion on that? Seeing a majority say yes, we'll set it up for a conversation and we'll see where the conversation goes.
Thank you.
Anything else for future discussion topics?
So there's a project that's going on in my district, a public works project that's on 4th Street that's been a nightmare for the neighbors. And I would like for us, I don't know, I'd like for us to talk about how we can do a better job of communicating what's going on and when these projects get delayed like that, and so that as a council we know what's going on, and then also communication can be improved with the residents as well. I don't know if that's a briefing topic or what, but that I would like to see us improve what's happening with projects like that.
We had at the end of the last downtown project, we had a council briefing to talk about contract mechanisms and ways to incentivize the contractor to work quicker. We could do a debrief on this one as well and get an understanding of your expectations of communications with the residents going forward, residents and business owners. So I'll throw that on.
4th Street, is that where you were talking about? Yeah, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
So I'll schedule.
So what's the cross street?
It starts at 12th Avenue North and goes all the way to 18th Avenue North.
I know where it is now.
Yeah.
I'll schedule something with Director Barron on that. We'll get that on there as well.
And then one other thing, I talked to Sandy about this briefly. We used to have some information on our website about public hearings so that citizens would understand what, have a little information about public hearings and what they, how they can prepare for public hearings. But that information has been removed, and I understand Ms. Robinson has some concerns, but I'd like to bring that to a public, to a briefing so that we could talk about it a little bit further and get her thoughts on it.
You all good with that topic as well? Seeing some heads not. I think there's a...
Let's do it.
We'll just do it.
Do we need to talk about it?
No, we'll put it on there. Okay, that will conclude our briefing for tonight. Thank you.